So you got children and I got a cat. This could go horribly wrong.
I mean, I feel like those are very similar things.
If I get disconnected halfway through, it's because of the cat that was typing on the keyboard. He likes to do that sometimes. What are you drinking?
I think we're going to start with the double matured Lagavulin special distiller release, double mature. Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll get to the bourbon.
You okay if we talk business?
Talk business.
You're pretty successful, right?
I don't know. It depends on how you measure success.
I mean, like you know, like you have to give actual numbers, but it's like you've paid off your student loans. You own a house. You bought the building you used to rent.
Correct.
I would say you're pretty successful. And this isn't meant to be like a flex. It's just like I've been like running into people that they get halfway through their program and they're like, am I going to be forever poor? Like,
yes.
Did I make a big mistake?
Yes.
Like yeah. You start to see the student loan stack up. And I think the NCCM just came out with some numbers. And it's like when you look at the median income of acupuncturists, it does not look great, especially
right.
when you compare it to the amount of loans that you go into. So I just kind of want to reassure people that it is possible to make money doing acupuncture, right?
I would be the single worst person to ask.
No, it's funny because you remember Natalie Vale?
Yes.
I remember having her on once and you were like, so like what advice would you give to like new acupuncturists? And she was like, don't do it. And like,
don't
oh, that's
do
great.
It. Right. So I think that I have an unhealthy part of my life where I like to overwork. And if you're okay with literally kind of like selling your soul and destroying your health and your body, you could make money doing this. It depends on like what your goals are and what you want.
I mean, do you think that's like that's specific to acupuncture, or
no,
is that just
yeah,
part of having
everything.
Your own business? That's just
right.
Like,
that, see, and I think that like most of the people interested in this profession, you know, they value the work-life balance and they understand health. And for me, I don't like. So like maybe it looks good from the outside for me for like what I'm in because of that. But yeah, there's definitely like a work-life thing that is completely the equation's pointed in the wrong direction.
Has that changed over time? Was it like you really had to hustle up front and then like after 5 years, you're like, I paid my dues and now I'm just coasting? Or is it still
no,
like,
God, no. So, and the reason that I would say that I'm the worst person to ask this about is, I think I specifically, like I have a fear. Fear is a motivating factor for me. And it's not really like it's the fear of monetary failure. So when we first started, when we opened the clinic, you know, we didn't pay ourselves clinic money for the first year, right? I was like, we're all going to get jobs. And so we had outside jobs. Look, we got two cats on the screen at the same time.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah, don't.
They're pod cats.
Don't drink the bourbon.
So we both had outside jobs and we lived off those. And 100% of the profit or the money that came in was reinvested into the infrastructure of the business. And we set goals on when we have X amount in the bank, then we will pay ourselves 10% and then we'll pay ourselves, you know, X, Y, Z. And I mean, I think I was able to do that because when we started our clinic, I had no children, right? I had like my lifestyle overhead was incredibly low.
Actually, I kind of want to ask you about this because I've been hearing this thing about like the three traits of ultra successful people that they tried to do this study about, like what makes a person successful. And it's kind of hard to narrow down because like some people get up early and some people sleep in late. Some people make their bed. Some people don't. Some people, Warren Buffett eats McDonald's and drinks Coca-Cola all day. So, but they were trying to narrow down what makes a person successful. And they found three traits that, number one, the person has like an extreme amount of self-confidence. They think they're better than everyone else and they think they're more deserving than everyone else. But kind of paradoxically, number two, they have an extreme amount of self-doubt that they're worried that everything will come crashing down around them. They worry that they'll never be good enough. They are just like are working out of fear. And number three, they have good impulse control that they're able to delay gratification and like you said, delay paying yourself a lot of money up front. And so it's kind of interesting because like I would hear that and then you'd see comments on that. People like, oh, yeah, those are good traits. I'm going to cultivate those traits to be successful. I'm like, that sounds really unhealthy. That sounds like like why celebrities commit suicide.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like those have to be innate. Like those work out for maybe the ultra successful because they're like they're innately drawn to it.
But do you feel like you have elements of those? Like, I'll give you my opinion if you want, but I mean,
I want your opinion on me. What was the first one? The first one's, oh, so I'm pretentious. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I'm definitely a very pretentious person, but hang on. Okay. So I am probably a super extremely pretentious person, but I think my flavor of pretentiousness, it does not include me thinking that I'm a better acupuncturist than other people. I would actually say, like, I'm, when it comes to acupuncture stuff, I'm probably a shit to decent acupuncturist, but my ability to connect with the patient and sit with them and get them to see confidence within me, maybe I'm like really good at that, but like the technical aspects of acupuncture, I don't know. I think there's probably people that are a lot better than me in that.
So are you faking it till you make it?
I don't believe that. You know that I'm like super opinionated about techniques and things. I'm just like, you know, I often tell patients that acupuncture is beautiful because of like the Renaissance painter thing where it's like, you've got all the Renaissance painters. They all painted the Virgin and Child, and every one of them is different, but every one of them is still a beautiful Virgin and Child. And just like it, it's like you're going to go to 15 acupuncturists, and somebody's going to do – they're all going to do different points, and probably you're going to have a good response from each one. So I think like my way of diagnosing and treating works for me, and I don't understand the way other people go about it, but it doesn't mean that they're wrong. Like I'm here for it. And I don't measure, I don't know that I care about the success of other people in relation to my own. So in the beginning of business, I definitely thought like, holy shit, there's too many acupuncturists in the city. We all can't have all the patients.
And where you're then, like, I'm going to run them all out of business by being better than them.
Right. Okay. And then the longer I'm in it, I'm like, oh, actually, it's fine. There's like enough people for everybody. And this is a sustainable career kind of thing.
Yeah, because I feel like especially early on, it's like during school, I was very confident in my academic abilities. Like I could very easily pass tests. But it took me a really long time to get confident treating patients.
Right.
Like I feel like that happened with massage first. That's why I did a lot of massage right at the beginning, because it only took me like 6 months to a year to get confident saying like I'm a kick-ass massage therapist, and that was something I could fall back on. It took me many years after that to feel like I'm confident actually getting results in acupuncture. So right. for me, it was the opposite. If anything, my self-esteem was too low and my confidence was too low when it came to treating patients or being able to like guarantee results.
Yeah, the guarantee results thing. But I think that's tricky. And I think there is an element of fake it till you make it with it. But also there's an element of you were educated in this and you've done it. And and at this point, when you're in a clinic, like even year one, it's like you should have seen the shit work. Like you should see somebody's neck pain go away.
But I don't know. I kind of feel like you were cocky and confident, at least when I saw you.
The most cocky motherfucker. Yeah, for sure. but I guess the thing that I would say is like, I think there's cocky people who on the inside don't believe they're good. And there's cocky people who on the inside think that they're good. And I think that my pretentiousness, cocky spectrum thing, I'm like balanced in the middle. I know I'm not God, but maybe I trust that I'm not a piece of shit. Maybe. I don't make my bed.
Or maybe it was something where it's like, I don't necessarily have confidence in me, but I have confidence in the medicine itself.
Right. And I can hide behind that. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. And so it was a thing of like, do I have the ability to make the medicine work? So the second part of that is like, people have a lot of self-doubt, like a fear that everything will come crashing down around them. Yeah, I feel like that definitely describes you.
Oh, I'm fucking blown out of proportion on that one, 100%. So the like I think people when they graduate from school, they make like the checklist of things that they want to see, like year one this, year three that, year five, and I'm like, there's a fucking pit of fire and hell if I don't succeed. And these are the things that I have to achieve to put in between me and certain fucking death that will prevent me from failing. And so that's where like the paying off my student loans was the very first one, right? And then the purchasing a house was part of that strategy financially. And then purchasing the building was the next step on that. And so, like, and those just go on into perpetuity. Like, I still feel like I think financially our clinic is probably in a very good space. I'm fucking terrified that it'll all come crumbling down to this day.
Still.
Yeah.
After it's been like 10 years and you still feel that way.
We're about to have our 12th birthday. And if there isn't a night per week that I lay awake, like, I'm like, what do I need to do? Like, look at these bags under the eyes. I fucking earned these.
Do you ever question about, like, did you ever have some self-reflection where you're like, is this healthy? Is it, or even is this logical?
Oh, yeah.
And did you do anything about it?
Or did you just continue
to be driven by, like,
make it worse? Yeah.
If I fail, my parents won't love me and my wife will leave me and my cat will go hang out somewhere else.
Cat is right here. This cat ain't leaving me. No, so it's like real easy because then we had kids and I'm like, oh, I just gotta fucking do it for the kids. So I hide behind that. Yeah. What was the third one?
First, because like I feel like other people weren't like that. Like I'm not sure Karen was like Keiko definitely wasn't like that, but I'm not sure that Karen was like that. Do you think it's just you?
And like I think that's probably my diagnosable thing. That's my problem.
And do you really think that the reason the clinic has survived is because you have that attitude?
No. Fuck no. No. It like is extremely obvious at this point. Like year three, year five, I would have told you yes. And I would have yelled at you with bloodshot eyes. I think the quote was, I'll shit on this desk if I, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it's like the further away I get from it, the more I'm like, oh yeah, no, it had just been fine. I have fucking done it only 9 to 5.
It's like I worried for, like, in retrospect, it's like I worried for nothing. The universe would have taken care of you.
I don't know, but yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, there's a happy medium here.
But the third one was impulse control, like the ability to delay gratification. And I think that's definitely you're like, I'm sleeping on a treatment table.
But that's double edged, right? Because we've definitely done where we've gone without. I like have trouble saying that in front of my ridiculous fireplace. Sorry. But the things that I would say that satiated my impulse, I put financial goals on, right? So I was like, I want a Mercedes and I'm not going to buy one until XYZ. And then I did that, right? That kind of thing. So I definitely like succumbed to impulse, but I made sure I like refer to it as the safety net. It's like I made sure the safety net was large enough that it's like this thing isn't going to really the same thing with like, am I going to feel it? Like people are like, don't buy Starbucks, brew the coffee at home. And it's like, that's true. But are you going to feel it financially if you got the Starbucks? And so same kind of thing. I'm like real into the numbers. And so amateurizing and making a goal is like one of the main things that I like to do with the business aspect of this. And so I love to set goals like that.
Yeah, but it's still like you set those goals and then it's like you were able to like not buy the Mercedes
right until it's time
that. so it wasn't like a
I mean now
that Lemieux every night just because I feel like a baller.
Exactly. Okay. No, don't.
So how focused were you on making money when you came into this? Because like early on the podcast, I had Lindsay Trottier on.
Love
and
her.
She told a story about how she was like, they were sitting in class the first day and they went around the circle going like, why did you get into Chinese medicine? And people were like, I just want to heal the world. That acupuncture helped me and I just want to help others. And she was like, I just want to make a shit ton of money. And like, and that is surprising. So was that the goal for you where you're like, I just want to make a shit ton of money? Or was it just kind of a happy consequence of doing your thing?
I wouldn't say happy consequence. So my like bullshit acupuncture story definitely started with the like save the world, peace and love, you know, happiness. I want to change the world and save the people. And then I was raised in a house and in a culture where like nobody explained fiscal responsibility to me. And I think it was my last year of PCOM is when I like actually sat down and I was like, I'm going to understand compounded interest. And when I figured that out, it became like a fire under my ass situation. So yeah, I like moved out to California, ran away from home. I had a like a really great job lined up, and like every like if I was smart, now that I look at it, if I was smart, I would have actually not gone to acupuncture school, and I would have just done the path that I was on. I'd have made a shit ton of money and been extremely comfortable and fine. Hopefully, if I'm lucky, I'll make a shit ton of money. I'll just have to have had to work a lot harder for it, which I value.
And I think that's the thing that, like, I've been looking at, like, even just, like, making YouTube videos and making courses and stuff like that, where it's just, like, Chinese medicine is just a shitty opportunity vehicle. Like, yeah. Any skills that you have, yeah. You could make so much more money doing something else.
Anything else, right.
Like, if you went into the pharmaceutical industry with your same set of skills, you would make 10 times
more. That's what I should have done. Yeah.
Where it's like, I've been making these YouTube videos. It's like, if I made YouTube videos about, like, business and email marketing – those same skills would make me 10 times the amount of money. It's just like, because we chose Chinese medicine.
Because we were dumb.
We're rowing upstream. We're rowing against the current. And it's just like a really shitty opportunity vehicle to make money. So I think that's the thing when people say, like, don't do it. It's like, if you're in it for the money, you can make more money doing other things. You have to love Chinese medicine.
Yeah, you have to have like that romanticized bullshit in your soul. Because anybody that I tell not to do it on this type of podcast, it's like, you're already fucked. You're already doing it. and it can be done. It's just that you have to be extremely diligent and willing to work hard. But also everybody's goals are different. Some people need $1 million a year to be happy, and some people need 40 grand. And so it's like you can achieve whatever you want to achieve, but you're going to be working your ass off, which I like.
Did you have any hangups about charging people money for acupuncture?
Yeah,
I feel this is the thing I still deal with. Just like selling courses and stuff like that, where it's like I had all these things about like, am I a sellout? Am I taking advantage of people? Like, am I an evil capitalist person? Did you have that starting out, and has that changed?
I'm 100% an evil capitalist person, but I still like. I will ring people up and I like can't look them in the eyes about it. And I don't think that's because I don't value the medicine. I think that's because I don't value myself. And that's fine. Realize I still ring them up.
So it's like you do it despite, it's not like your feelings haven't changed. It's just that your actions around the feelings, like you work despite like.
It's like. I look down and I'm like, look at the pit of hell that if I don't fucking pay these bills, I'm getting cast into. Yeah, it's right there. I can feel the heat.
Because that's the thing is I feel like Karen, I don't think was ever that way.
No.
Like Karen was like, I will charge you money and I will. And
yeah. Karen's you're
lucky,
so good
you're lucky
that.
I'm not charging you double sort of thing. And like, I don't know if that's just like she's a princess or if it's just like she worked in retail and so she's very accustomed to charging money where I never was.
She has like emotional balance. Like her heart and her soul and her mind are in the correct place and they understand things.
Whereas we're just like overcompensating like our childhood trauma.
Right. Know? I'm skewed in that department. But me and Karen have this joke that we do, which is the like me and her together are we make one samurai. And so thank fucking God, because I would have like literally charged people nothing.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a common thing like in business, like you have that yin and yang where it's like sometimes in businesses you have one person is the visionary where it's like, oh, we got to go out and do all these amazing things. And then one person is like more grounded in reality where it's like, well, we actually have to plan that out and think about how we're going to pay for it. So it seems like a thing where you're like, I want to help people. And she's like, there's still that yin and yang balance there. Weird segue. Do you use Evil Bone Water?
I fucking love Evil Bone Water. I love that man. He's the only reason I use it on me. I used it on me yesterday. I love the state of Florida because of that man. He
like there's nothing else to love about Florida except for Evil Bone Water.
Nothing else to love about Florida except Evil Bone Water. He is a patriot amongst us.
Do you use it on yourself?
Yeah.
What do you use it for?
I got back in the when I had COVID in 21, I got the fun COVID toe. I don't know if you've heard about this symptom.
I haven't heard about it's that. Tell me about your COVID toe.
It's essentially gout. Like it feels like gout. It looks like gout. But you like get it when you get COVID. And so what was really funny is like I'm pro vaccine. Saying that with a serious face, and I'm pro mask wearing, and I don't wear the mask enough. and generally like people just spit on me and that's fine. And so for a while I was actually like, every time I was getting infected with COVID, I was actually just getting gout. So I was getting it like every 3 or 6 weeks or something. People would call me and be like, oh my God, I saw you on Thursday. And I tested positive for COVID the next day. And then 2 days later, my toe would hurt. I put it on that. And then I had a Achilles.
Oh, did that work for you?
So you have to keep it on there for that, but it made it incredibly bearable. And then
because like I've been getting gout flare ups, and maybe it's a COVID thing, but I've had that a little bit. Yeah. And I
had to soak it, so I had to, and it was like not happening in the first 24 hours, but the payoff was a little bit down the road. And then I recently had like a calf strain that made my Achilles, like where the attachment is, hurt, and I literally just like poured it into a Tupperware and just soaked my foot in it, and that shit saves my life. I love it.
Yeah, so I kind of want to pump him up because I feel like Mark, like as the manufacturer, he can't say anything without getting in trouble with the FDA. Like he can't make claims about it.
Yeah,
If we sit here and say like, oh, it really worked for my Achilles tendon pain, like they can't sue us.
I don't see a phenomenal amount of people per day. I think like my average is probably 16 people, 20 people. I bet I use it on 80% of them. And we sell droves of it to people.
Okay, I was going to say, so you use it in the clinic?
Yeah.
Like you use it like when you're swabbing points or when you're...
cheat codes. No, if somebody's got a boo-boo, I'm putting evil bone water on it. I just like keep it there. And then inevitably, I would say 50% or more of the time, if I spritz it on them, they're just like, sell me a bottle.
Awesome.
And then people walk in. You know, Kentucky's like, everybody's very community oriented here. So we'll have people walk in and they're like, Janice had some evil bone spray and I need it. And so I cannot, and I my history with like the lineage of the medicine and loving the ancient texts and reading Chinese and all that stuff. I like cannot say enough about somebody who actually sourced the correct ingredients and produces it the correct traditional way. There's literally no product like this on the market. And he just got into VA. I mean, this guy's going to be catapulted into the stratosphere momentarily. He needs no help from us, but he makes a damn fine product.
I think this is important to bring up because I feel like a lot of practitioners sleep on this, like the idea of selling products in the clinic. Like, do you know like how much of your revenue comes from like selling physical products?
Like selling raw herbs or selling evil bone water?
Anything.
So selling raw herbs, I mean, we do a massive amount, like a crazy amount. It's not 50%, but it's a lot of fucking, we sling a lot of herbs. And evil bone water, no, 2%. But we like do a lot of herbs and acupuncture, right? And then we don't do pills or anything.
I guess I'm thinking like, I've heard some people, it's like, oh yeah, I started selling evil bone water in the clinic and it's like free money. I'm like, yeah, welcome to capitalism. Like when you sell things, you make money. And I feel like a lot of people are just into like, I'm just going to do acupuncture treatments, and they forget that they can actually sell things.
People should sell things as long. So I'm adamantly against a couple things. One of which is like the snake oil pushing. Like, so I'm not going to just like sell random pills, right? Especially if I don't know the efficacy of it. Like I know the efficacy of the raw herb, right? So I can't tell if the tea pill Xiaoyasan is going to work, but I know my raw herbs are going to work. Evil bone water is a no-brainer. And the thing that makes me the most comfortable with him is he's like, here's the price you pay and here's the market price. Do not charge more or less. And that makes me really happy because he is approaching the market the correct way.
Yeah, and this is a good thing where like he doesn't allow it to be sold on Amazon. So because that's like a thing I've had where like I've told patients like, oh, you should take Qingwei San. Just take it for a week and let me know how it goes. And then they're like, oh yeah, I ordered a 2-month supply on Amazon. Right. Like I'm specifically told you not to do that. Right. So he doesn't let it be sold on Amazon, and it's like he does have a cap that if you want to sell it online, you can't sell it for less, and that like makes it so people are not going online. You can still stay within your business. So. And is converting to the sale, is that pretty frictionless? Like you just use it in clinic and then people come to the front desk and they're like, yeah, I want to bottle that to take home.
Do you
have a sales pitch?
No, there's no sales pitch. And and part of that is just because a lot of the people, so we don't advertise, right? Mine is only referral. And so when people walk in the door and book with us, they're automatically open to the idea of trusting us. And then once they kind of like see our operation and deal with us, they're like, okay, you're personable. You're not trying to, you know, I'm not that this is wrong, but I'm like, I do not want to do the like packages or give me five sessions to try it. And then we reevaluate. I'm like, no, we're going to do one and it's either going to work or not. And once they kind of see that mentality, if I'm like, buy this weird shit in a jar, they do it. And it sells itself. Like, honestly, once they use it at all, they're coming back for more and sending people to get it.
So if you want to try a bottle of Evil Bone Water, you can get single bottles from Dragon Blood Balm. So I'll put links to that below. But if you want to get a wholesale account, go to Mark Brinson. The Dragon Blood Balm is an affiliate link, so that's something I earn a little commission about. If you go set up a wholesale account with Mark, that's not an affiliate link. I don't have anything set up with him. So, but I definitely recommend it. Like, it's a great product, and I like it because it's like, it's a win-win-win. It's like Mark is able to make this traditional medicine and make money off of that. And then he's able to sell it to acupuncturists, and acupuncturists are able to sell a physical product and make more revenue off of that. And then it's like the patients benefit from the product. So it's like, it's a win-win-win all around. So it's like, I think that's like the correct way to do capitalism.
This guy is not doing the wrong thing here. This kind of business model that he's doing needs to be hoisted up.
Have your goals with the clinic changed over time?
Yeah.
Because I feel like this is, I just got back from symposium and I was thinking like, it's always fun to see like the students come and they're like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and they have all these ideas about what they're going to do. And I seem to remember that when I first graduated, I knew a lot of people were like, I'm going to set up an integrative health clinic and I'm going to have all these people come together. I'm going to have this clinic with 16 treatment rooms, and then you see them 5 years later and reality is set in. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to do acupuncture. Or like, I'm just going to rent one room from a practitioner. Did that happen to you?
So, you know, when I graduated, I definitely thought it was important to have the community approach of like the fully integrated clinic. That changed, but is kind of still the same for us. The other thing was that I was like, within our first 1 to 3 years of business, I thought it would be very important to not necessarily franchise, but have multiple locations, this kind of thing. And like the treatment, like for lack of a better analogy, like the pyramid scheme of practitioners, I thought was like, really, this is how you do the business. And to some extent, I agree with it still. And I think it is, you have like, you know, your cast of people who own it. And then below them is the cast of people who like show up when they show up, this kind of thing. But you have like so many practitioners that you can see just like a mill of patients, but giving good quality treatments. the thing that changed for me was the priority on making sure that I was not like cheating the customer, lying to the customer, giving ineffective treatment, that kind of thing. So it really moved from this grandiose idea to how do I hone me and my skill so that I know at the end of the day, I'm doing the most honest thing. And for me, that was like, so we're not expanding, like we're not doing multiple treatment locations. This is just for money. Like when you do this kind of thing, and that's not wrong and it's not bad, but you can never get people to like love something as much as you love it, and that's completely valid. The integrated clinic approach, the way that worked out for me was I don't want to manage people. I found out real quick that that's not a highlight for me.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
that's definitely a skill that not everybody has.
Yeah, that's not and it's not a skill that I have. Like, I don't want to micromanage people. I don't want to give people numbers and statistics and try to motivate them. And so I, like real early on in our clinic, we got in touch with a group of counselors, psychiatrists, and we started treating each other's patients and noticing that it's like, oh my, this is great. We have like this great benefit of treating with each other. And so we like kind of integrated with them. They were in a different space. and then we noticed that, especially for like scoliosis, back pain, tension, this kind of stuff, if we were doing acupuncture and people were seeing a specific yoga school, they were getting just ridiculous results. So then that was when we were like, okay, so we're going to buy this building and I'm not going to manage you all, but if you all want to be renters in the building, I want to essentially make a one-stop shop. So I don't need my finger in your business. Like, to me, the minute you start making money off of somebody, that taints the relationship. And that was extremely evident. Like, just for me, the minute I tried to get pie, I was like, something's different here and this needs to change. So for me, it was a cleaner transaction. If I'm like, no, we're just in the same geographic location and I'm pulling in, I've got a PT upstairs, I've got the yoga people upstairs, I've got the psychiatrist upstairs, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but that's very different than like bringing them in house and being right. Like, I'm making a commission no, yeah. off of this, or like you're my employee. It's just more like you have a referral network and right. you also rent to them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so I think for me, like I'm a personality and I am extremely straightforward to the dickish degree with people.
Yeah.
And so it's better if I don't control you or you don't see me making money off of you. I'm really better integrated more harmoniously outside of that relationship. And so I just looked for a way to make that work.
Yeah. And I feel like this is a thing where it's like, you can either be like the artist, the technician, or you can be the entrepreneur. And
right.
so like an analogy would be like, I've been getting into woodworking and it's kind of like, I could just get really good at woodworking and make really beautiful coffee tables and sell those. And that's like the technician or the artist approach. Or I could make a coffee table design and figure out a way to make like an assembly line and figure out
China
a way to mass
it. Right.
mass produce it. And that's more the entrepreneur route.
Right.
And I feel like you can have that with acupuncture where it's like you're just going to work on being a better clinician. And maybe as you get better, you start charging more money and that's how you scale up.
Sure.
Or you can go that route of I'm going to hire people to work with me and I'm going to basically make money off of their labor.
Yeah. I want people to work with me for a lifetime. Like I literally, like that's my goal whenever we bring somebody into the clinic. And I have never been successful in retaining people when they feel it's a pyramid scheme. And so, and I mean that in the positive way is like, you know, money comes into the clinic and the clinic keeps it. I feel like for me, I saw that it was, you know, you have a limited amount of time and then they're going to leave to be the king of their own pyramid, and which is valid. I could not work under anyone. I could not have a yoke on me. And so I completely understand it. So mine is more of like a lateral thing now.
So do you hire people, acupuncturists, massage therapists, other people?
We have a massage therapist. We have other acupuncturists, and I essentially try to make the deal I try to make it so enticingly tantalizing that they never want to leave. And then
is that like a percentage? Or
yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's when we charged $80 per session for acupuncture, it was the clinic gets 20 and you get 50. It was always like overpay the person to where I'm not making money, but we are covering the the needles, that kind of thing.
And is it kind of with the intention that eventually this is just a stepping stone for them and eventually they're going to go and fly free and start their own practice?
No, like
do you want to keep them in-house?
I literally want them in-house like essentially forever. I want their soul to continue working there after they die. Because I feel like when you stack people under you and you make money, but you're going to lose that person before their prime. And in acupuncture, I feel like prime is 10 years down the road, maybe more. And so I want to cultivate such a good relationship with people. I want it to be easier for you to stay. And then it's usually my dickish personality that drives them away.
I'm trying to think if I have anything else business related. I haven't eaten a whole lot today, so it's like the bourbon is really getting to me. How long have we been going? Oh, it's only been 40 minutes. I thought we were at like an hour. I was trying to like stretch it out to an hour.
More business.
That's all the bullet points I wrote down. Do you have anything else business related? We can switch to something else if you want.
Business related, things that people should think about. So you should never skip money on a really good CPA. I'm an acupuncturist. I would go to jail. Well, a white collar jail. So like an ankle monitor, but I would go to jail if I didn't have a CPA. you should definitely think about setting up with a multiple standing, so like LLC and S Corp standing, because you're your own entrepreneur and there are definitely benefits under both of those. If you are owning the property, you should have a trust. If you don't have a trust and you own the property, you should go out and get a trust immediately. You have not been in business if you haven't been sued. It's coming. Like, it's a thing. If I'm not sued fiscally for some stupid bullshit, then it like wasn't a good year.
What have you been sued for? I'm curious. Like, do you have any good stories about that?
No, just stupid shit. Like, it's always like the sidewalk was cracked and somebody sued us before anyone tripped. Like, they sued us because that, this kind of thing.
Yeah, I remember, I think you had pharmacy in your name to begin with.
Oh,
you
God,
had
to, well, yeah.
You had to do day a whole bunch one. Of bullshit. Yeah.
Literally day one, we were Meridian Acupuncture and Herbal Pharmacy. And before we put up the sign, the lawyers rolled up. And then, so we rent to people now, right, in the space. And we have, like, rent during COVID, renters wanted to break lease. And they, like, preemptively sued, even though they didn't need to. So it's like, you need to secure yourself with so many firewalls. And legal paperwork and CPAs and lawyers are wonderful for that. If you are in this career and you are not planning, and I mean from like day one of school, and you are not planning for retirement, pick a fucking different career. Retirement needs to be planned for. You cannot do it. I don't care if TikTok tells you to buy only S&P 500 ETFs. I mean, you should do that. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But, yeah.
This is not financial advice.
Yeah, this is not financial advice. But but you should seriously think about that. There's so many good... I think what I see with a lot of acupuncturists when I talk to them personally is there are so many good kind of those like white collar crimes that are like not crimes, but like the rich people know to do kind of things that you can take advantage of because you own a business. And we as acupuncturists never really see beyond the table. And so really investigating that and focusing on it and doing those things to help buffer you. Tax sheltering is incredibly important with this type of business. And in my mindset, you have to be tax sheltering.
Oh, yeah. And even it's like the reason I went to Pacific Symposium, it was like I'm not really interested in very many of the speakers. It was just like I want to take a vacation to California, and because it's CEUs,
it's right off.
It's a business
and,
expense.
And that's the kind of thing, is it's like the when people say something's a write-off and something's a business expense, like you do have to bring in the money to pay for it, but depending on the creativity of your CPA, like there's a lot of reasons that things are expensible. And so as long as you don't mind paying business taxes on it, you can do a lot of things with the money. And you could actually just like stash tons of cash in CDs. Like that's not illegal. And we would have, our clinic would have actually fell apart during COVID if I had not just like been hoarding money in an IRA and CDs and this type of thing.
Do you take insurance? You take insurance.
We take a little tiny bit of insurance. It's still not a thing in Kentucky. So we tell people we'll try it and it never works. It's not lucrative for us. PPP, the personal PIP is like incredibly awesome. I joke that I want to be the very first like ambulance chasing acupuncturist, and I stand by that.
PIP, what's PIP?
It's like the personal injury protection. Okay. In the state of Kentucky, when you get hit by a car or whatever, the state mandates that you're just awarded $10,000 for healthcare, and you can use that in for acupuncture. So we definitely like make that known amongst our patients. And unlike like private insurance, they just pay. They just cut you, just send them chart notes and they cut you a check.
Yeah, because that's what I've heard, that if you do take insurance, like it's worth it to get an insurance biller.
Yeah. So we have
don't do that shit yourself.
We have a self-trained, it's like our front desk girl. We self-trained her to do the insurance billing.
What are you on now?
So this is actually like one of those insanely rare sought after bottles of bourbon for the people that are into bourbon. It's Old Forester President's Choice. It's not made every year and it only comes out one barrel at a time. Essentially, when they have a barrel so good they can't put it in another bottle, they like give it as a gift to the president of the company and he makes a limited edition run of it. So there's like usually 75 bottles like every couple years.
Because it's like, yeah, I've heard of Old Forester, but I didn't think it was especially top shelf. But
this is the most top shelf product that they have outside of King of Kentucky. It's debatable.
So when he says you hired a front desk person, how far into it when you were hiring a front desk person, or did you kind of do it yourself at the beginning?
No, I was like adamantly never going to hire a front desk person until the Karen sat down and ran the numbers for me and showed me like, look how easy life would be and how you would not lose money and you would actually make more money. And it's true. It, like, she was right about it. She's fucking right about everything, and that's the problem with her.
Yeah.
But no, it like it. There was a point in which it made fiscal, like financial sense, and I think that for us was like maybe year five, somewhere around there. When you're like so busy, you can't answer the phone. That was the point.
Yeah, yeah, because I feel like that's a thing that people say, that like entrepreneurship is, or owning a business is, a process of progressively giving up more and more control.
Right.
And so it's like, especially if there are like lower value activities like answering the phone.
Right.
It's like, if you can make $80 an hour sticking needles in people, you should not, like, and you can hire somebody for $15 an hour answering
right.
the phone. Like, that's basic math. Has that been a thing for you of like this, I don't want to give up control?
I'm like a control freak. Yeah, no, I'm total, like, the control is my whole issue.
Like, nobody can answer the phones as good as I do, sort of thing.
I can't get on a plane without anxiety, and it's not the fear of heights. It's like, I need to be flying this thing. Like, I have so much control issues over it.
Do you still swipe the credit cards yourself? I remember that being a thing.
Yes, I will always swipe the credit card. I will never make somebody else go for my blood.
I feel like that would give you, like, running the numbers.
That's too much.
That would give you more time if you just went to the next room and started treating patients and let your front desk person swipe the credit card.
And that
or
might
like,
be like a...
Do you handle your own scheduling?
Yeah.
Or does the front desk person...
Oh. So there's a part of this for me is actually like, this might go well in big city California, New York kind of thing, where you all can just walk room to room. But we're still like a little enough clinic and community that it's like, now I like walk people to the front, check them out, shake their hand, look them in the eye. Like this type of thing is super important to me. So the front desk girl books for me, sure, but I'm mainly the person taking the phone, because we're dumb and we give people our cell phone numbers, like, still. And so I've like, literally while we're talking, I've got like so many text messages blowing up, and I'm like trying to book them while we're talking.
Yeah, pro tip, if you live in a gay part of town, don't give people your cell phone number.
I don't recommend it. Yeah, it's real weird.
But I almost feel like that would be one of those things where it's like the swiping the credit card, it's nice to have that separation of you're like, I'm the practitioner, I stick the needles in. And then it's like, if they have a problem with payment, it's like, you can be mad at the front desk girl. Don't be mad at me.
I wish I had the balls to hide behind her on that one, but no. That's the Indiana Jones theme.
Bum,
yeah, good. Nicholas nailed it. All right, I think that like people want real life examples, and I'm going to expose real life examples.
Give me your real life examples.
All right, so when I graduated PCOM, I took out full student loans, and I think the day that I was eligible to begin treating people, I want to say it was like under 120,000. And like adjust that for inflation, because this was like, what, 2010, 11?
Yeah. And I feel like this is something that has changed, that at least when I took the California exam, it was like I graduated school and they wouldn't let me take the exam until
six
August.
Months, right?
I didn't get my results until September, and they didn't give me my license until October. And it's like the day I got my license was like the day my first student loan payments were
due. Yeah.
So
yeah, my thing was like, I didn't understand compound interest, and the interest started because this was also like in the time of the financial default of like 2008. So my student loans were bought by four different companies. And honestly, this is one of those things where like, thanks Obama, he saved my life, because the law back then was like, however many ways it's divided, the interest is frozen on all but one of them. And so I believe, like, for argument's sake, let's say it was like 100. So the day I graduated, it was like 108 or 100. And then the day that the first payment was due, which was, I think, like 6 to 7 months later, it was literally like just under 120,000. Like, the interest grew so incredibly quick. It was like nauseating. And that's when I was like, Wikipedia, what's compound interest? Like, teach me this shit.
Yeah,
and,
or people talk about like the snowball thing.
Yeah,
where it's like
pay
off the highest.
And I like you know, we weren't woke back then, so there was like no hope for student loans to be paid off for us. So I like completely freaked out and started looking up, like, I'm going to read everything. I'm going to start to try to learn as much about finances as I can. And the way that it worked for us was moved home, opened a clinic, began treating people. I think we were, so for the first year, we did not pay ourselves a penny. And I believe we brought in, I think like our best month was $3,000, like something. And I mean, that's with like, and that's not a, like with expenses. Like it was like, we made $3,000.
And that was like between four practitioners.
Yeah. 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 It was bad, right? It was rough and it grew and it like, we did well, it grew fine. We were able to buy our first home for a fair market value, and they adjusted, I think, like for like back then, there's always a first time homeowners can pay a lower percentage for your down payment, which asterisk just makes your monthly payment bigger. So, you know, definitely calculate those numbers. But we bought our first home, I think we got to pay 5% down. And then we cranked as hard as we could to pay that off. And I think it took us just under 7 years. So we did nothing. Like we had a fun life and those were very memorable times, but that was before children. And we were literally, I think the payment was $1,600 a month. And we were like 5,000, 8,000, like cranking in as much money as we could to it. As soon as we had paid it off, we used the equity in that house as the down payment for the building. And so that was what allowed us.
When you bought your acupuncture right. building.
And yeah. So I think the thing that is missed by people that people don't generally talk about, and I'm like, I'll give you numbers, like I'm happy about it, is whatever your goals are, there is a strategy, and leverage is a thing that should be used, but you should use it incredibly wise. And you can always not eat and save money. Like it is always a stress. Like saving money should be the biggest priority. Cause to me, I'm like, I'm that person that like, yes, you should have 6 months of like emergency fund cash, like under your mattress type of thing. And for me, that's the home one. And then there should also be like a business one. Right. And so I'm very pro keeping as much money in the business as possible. Predominantly, I just don't want to pay taxes on it. And so I'm like, I like to this day will be paid minimum wage. Like I would prefer to be paid minimum wage and budget my money accordingly than to actually have to pay taxes. And that worked out real well during the pandemic when we just like needed $100,000 to survive. And it happened to be just sitting in a bank account.
Just to be clear, when you were starting out, were you paying rent or were you living with your parents basically?
So when I was in California, I was paying rent and I was putting that into student loans. And then the reason that I moved home was it made more sense to like live at mommy's house. And the thing that worked out for me there was my parents were like in the midst of selling their home and moving in. So I could have, like, if I would have gotten into the situation where I needed to rent, it would have actually not been tragic in Kentucky because I could actually find $300 a month rent at that time if I wanted to. Yeah. Not now, it's an incredibly different story, but people have to remember that, like, if you adjust for inflation, it still makes sense. It's just the numbers look a lot larger.
And did you get a loan to open your clinic?
I'm glad you brought this up. So I was adamantly against getting a loan. Like I in no way, shape or form wanted a loan. I had $10,000 into my name of like graduation from undergrad money where like I had just accumulated a little bit from gifts. And then when I was at PCOM, I worked as a librarian and just kind of like saved money. So we had four practitioners who opened the business, and when we ran the numbers on everything, we went to a family member, not one of mine, but another family member of a practitioner, and we were like, the bank will give us this percent interest. Will you give us a small loan? And the loan was, I mean, it might have been like $25,000 and then my 10. And then I believe that we paid that off. Like we had negotiated a 3% interest rate on it, like a variable rate that would refi every like 3 to 5 years or something. And I think we paid it off in a number of months. Like it was my predominant goal was to get rid of that as soon as possible. But I wasn't paying rent, right? And I had another job. So
Yeah. All of you work. You were like a PA or something.
Karen was
working at Trader Joe's.
I was an ER technician, and the beauty of being an ER technician is the ER is open 24 hours a day. So I would go in at midnight and work and then go play acupuncture during the day. And like when you're 27 or whatever I was, you can do that game. What other questions? Yes.
I don't know. My ability to focus has been going.
Good. Think about it. I got to throw a log on the fire.
That sounds like a euphemism.
This is actually like, I wish you could hear him because it's just a pro Karen podcast. It's like just a like, wouldn't it be great to be Karen? Like, we have all these problems and we can't do anything. But like, Karen doesn't have these. So like, how did she manage that? She has self-confidence. Like, we don't understand where that comes from.
It's like, I have so many deficiencies, and I'm not right. sure if it's just like, I don't know if it's a traumatic childhood or the way I grew up, but no, like Karen just seems to like sail across things.
It's like, I'm close enough to her that I'm like, if I was not married, or at least not to her, I wouldn't wonder if I was autistic. But like, when I sit next to her, I'm like, am I on the spectrum? Am I a specky? Like, what's going on here? Do I have a touch of the tism? Probably. I love that Elon Musk, right?
I mean, like, how did that happen? Like, how did, like we have so much self-doubt and so much, like, my self-worth is tied up in this thing about, like, am I deserving of this? And Karen is just like, I will charge you fucking $200 for cosmetic acupuncture. Yeah. And if you can't pay it, you can get the fuck out.
Right?
Like, I don't know if that was just like she was working at Crate and Barrel and it's a bunch of rich people and she's like,
no, I think she respects herself. I think she respects her. Like, she's not doing the spitting. She's doing the spitting on and I'm the spitted upon.
Like she has actual self-worth and right. like self-esteem and confidence that she can.
It's innate. Self-confidence is wild.
Oh, fuck.
I'll never get there.
So that's the end of part one. We actually kept drinking and talking for a while, but the topic changed from business to more TCM-related stuff, some of our unusual theories in Chinese medicine, and how we should feel about the rise of dry needling. So if you want to hear more about that, check out part two in the next episode. This episode can be downloaded at podcast.tcmstudy.net/session20. As always, special thank you to the Patreon members for supporting the podcast, the YouTube channel, and the website tcmstudy.net. If you would like to join them in their support, head on over to podcast.tcmstudy.net and click on the donate button in the upper right corner. But that's all for today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.